KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. When the results of the 2016 presidential election were announced in November, CNN commentator Van Jones got emotional on television.
This was a white lash. This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president in part. And that's the part where the pain comes.
Van Jones wanted to better understand the stunning election results, so he sat down for dinner in the homes of Trump supporters. He joins us to talk about the political divides in America, how we can turn national anxiety into real change, and his new book, Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart, How We Come Together. Coming up next, after this. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. When Donald Trump won the presidency last year, CNN commentator Van Jones started crying on TV. The Democratic strategist called it, quote, a nightmare and a whitewash against a changing country. His post-election search for answers about America's political divisions became a CNN miniseries called The Messy Truth with Van Jones, and he's expanded it into a new book called Beyond the Messy Truth. Van Jones spent many years as a social justice and environmental activist here in the Bay Area, founding and leading a number of local groups, including the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights and Dream Corps. And he also served as an advisor to make that Dream Corps. He also served as an advisor to the Obama White House, and he joins us in studio. Welcome, Van Jones. Good to have you back here.
Good to be back. My third time on your show, sir.
Who's counting? Maybe as often as we can get you. How long are you in town for?
A couple of days. I'm doing a number of events here in the Bay Area and just getting a chance to be not in Washington, D.C., which I love.
Well, we're glad to have you back, and I'm glad to read your book, too, and find a lot in it to talk about here and to get listener responses to. It's a vision. I would almost describe it as a vision. It's a lot of narrative and a lot of what you found talking to people, and we'll talk about all that. But I found it really... Well, you say we need to search for bottom-up bipartisan agreement and really staking out some kind of way to overcome this terrible polarization.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody that I know is just miserable and has been miserable for almost 2 years since that guy came down the escalator. And there's some stuff we're just going to have to fight about in this country. I mean, I am not a Pollyanna person. Anybody in the Bay Area knows me. I've been on the front lines of social justice my whole career. So when it comes to immigration, LGBTQ, Muslims, women, you know, we're not going to turn our back on those folks. But you can't fight about everything all the time and still have a country. And a third of this book is just pointing out stuff that is common sense, bipartisan stuff we could be working on right now, whether it's the opioid addiction crisis, our courts, the criminal justice system is a disaster. Both parties know it. We're not teaching the kids about the jobs of tomorrow, artificial intelligence, clean energy, Mars. So there's stuff that's like big, big, big common ground stuff. But we are so distracted by these tweets. I mean, he is ADD. You don't even have to say his name. Just say he. He. He is ADD and petty. And now we're becoming ADD and petty. And we're not focusing on the stuff that's actually going to get us out of the mess. And so that's why I wrote the book.
Well, you say common pain should lead to common purpose. And you even bring up work that you did with Newt Gingrich on opioid epidemic and criminal justice. And so you're saying essentially you can work across the aisles about things that matter to people and should matter to people.
Listen, we should fight about the stuff that we don't agree about. But how about this? From 9 to noon, we'll just fight about all the stuff we don't agree about. And then maybe from noon to 3, could we work on – this is life and death stuff. This addiction crisis is killing people across the country. My close friend Prince, the late rock star, died.
You not only work, by the way, for President Obama, you work for Prince.
Yes, I went from working for a president to working for a prince. In any other country, that's called a promotion. So I'm very happy about that. But you know, I miss him every day. He died of the same addiction crisis, this opioid painkiller overdose that people in coal country are dropping like flies over. Common pain, but no common purpose. I got stuff in the book. We could fix this thing tomorrow on a bipartisan basis. We're not even talking about it because this guy has us all going nuts every day.
We were talking about it when he made an appointment that essentially went south because it went back to the legislation that was passed. And that goes back to something that I found really fascinating in your book, which is you say a lot of the mess we're in now, whether it's him or whether it's all these other things that you've alluded to already, neoliberals, you call them. They're
yes, sure.
culpable.
Well, I just think that part of the reason that, you know, I try, this book is like a, it's like a tough love letter to both progressives in one part of the book, and then a tough love letter to conservatives as well. But I start off the book pointing out both political parties let the country down so badly. Going back to the 1990s, you look at both political parties, this bipartisan elite at the top of these parties, both saying these trade deals are going to be great for everybody, and they weren't. Both saying you can deregulate the banks and everything's going to work out fine. We lost $1 trillion, a million homes, but both parties signed off on letting Wall Street do what it wanted to do. Both parties said we're going to build prisons everywhere and that's going to make America better, and it destroyed black communities. Both political parties said we should go into these dumb wars. So when you have a bipartisan elite failure across the board for two decades, you are going to have rebellions. And on the left, that's Black Lives Matter, that's Bernie Sanders. On the right, it started off as a Tea Party, then it curdled into this Trump thing. But hurt people holler. And there was pain in the blue part of America, and Democrats rallied around that. But we didn't draw our circle big enough this time to pull in also those people who were hurting in red state America.
You know, when you talk about the elites, it almost sounds a little bit like the Bannon rhetoric.
Well, listen, but look, there is a rebellion from ordinary people. You know, Bannon is pointing to something. Now, he's pointing to a division. He's basically pointing to problems to create more divisions. I'm trying to point to those same problems to point to some solutions. You know, Bernie Sanders, other progressives have also pointed out, and it's true, it's unfortunate. Look, I'm a part of it. I grew up in red state America, but I got a chance to go to a fancy law school, Yale, and I've taught at Princeton. I'm a fellow at MIT. I understand how easy it is for us to get divorced from the people I grew up with accidentally. Nobody meant to do this, but I beg progressives now. I'm begging us, please, we have to listen a little bit better. The way we talk about red state voters and Trump supporters is the best thing we could do to help Donald Trump win a reelection. Because what we're doing now is we're essentially sounding like people who just don't get the level of dysfunction and pain. I've been to towns in red parts of America where the mortician has to order freezer trucks every Friday, the coroner's office, because he knows the morgue will be filled up with dead bodies from suicides and opioid overdoses by Sunday. And he's got to get, or she's got to get, freezer trucks on Friday to deal with the bodies. That kind of catastrophe in red state America, we should have been leading the fight on. And we weren't. And we missed a lot of opportunities like that. So all I'm saying is, let's keep our circle strong with all the people who've always been left out. We're not going to turn our back on anybody in our base. But let's draw our circle a little bit bigger to pull in more people who are hurting so we never have this happen again.
Well, when I read your book, I was thinking, in fact, of Hillbilly Elegy, because you go into the heartland. You go into, you have a character you call Bryce Shoemaker, right?
Yes.
In Hoosier State of Indiana, Pence's state. And kind of give a composite portrait of this man's life, and it's very telling. It's the sort of thing that Ken Stern, who used to be head of NPR recently, did. He went and he mm-hmm. talked to these people. He wanted to figure out what is it that we don't understand that we're not getting in this, especially people who live on the coasts and the big metropolitan areas, because
yes.
they don't get it, really.
Well, and, you know, some of us grew up in those places, and we got away from those places because we didn't like what was going on there, especially people like me, probably people listening to this show. You know, if you grew up in a red county or a red state like I did, like, we're too sensitive, man. We don't, you know, that culture is tough. And so we got away from that stuff. We came to the coast and we found a community where we can thrive and where being gay doesn't matter as much. And being a woman, you can still thrive. We love it here. But what we forgot, we got in that Obama bubble bath for about 8 years and we were feeling so good and we were feeling so wonderful. And then we stood up and we were wet and wrinkly and weak and we weren't prepared to have a real fight. And part of the thing that happened We fought hard in 2008 as progressives. I mean, we put it all on the line. 2012, the same thing. 2016, there was a little bit of a sense that we had a lock on this thing and that there was no way a Trump could win. And when you take your foot off the gas like that, you wind up getting beat.
But well, you were a Paul Revere. You were,
yes.
somewhat modestly call yourself a Paul Revere, but you were saying, look, this guy can win before anybody else was saying it. And then when you saw Brexit, it really did catch fire on Facebook as you began to communicate some of your apprehensions and concerns. Just wondering, though, I mean, a lot of what you've rendered here is going out and meeting people face-to-face, like I said, what Ken Stern did. And we just recently did a show last week with some people from Glide, who did the same thing. They had conservatives, different brand of conservative, admittedly, here in San Francisco, progressives sit down and talk about their differences face-to-face and just talk about who they were and what they were. And that can make an enormous quantum difference. The difficulty, it seems to me, is how do you do that, particularly when you have, and I think you labeled it in your book, the politics of accusation.
Just
people pointing fingers and arguing with one another, and I'm right and I'm wrong, and you're wrong.
Well, and that's... You know, and listen, you know, I confessed to this in the beginning of the book. I mean, I think the introduction of the book, I can't come out here with any credibility and say a thing about this food fight culture because I'm a pundit on cable television. I'm a part of the problem. I admit it. I'm a part of the problem.
You're a big shot now, sitting down here before we went on the air with the iPhone and so forth. And this is what people on CNN do when they come on the air.
Yeah, well, you know, try to juggle a lot of stuff here. But, you know, for me... what I've noticed, and I think a lot of people have noticed this as well, it doesn't matter if you're on the left, right, or center. The national conversation, the DNA of it now, is I'm right and you're wrong. We're right and they're wrong. And, you know, it's unfortunate because, though it's fine, I don't mind fighting about stuff that, you know, I feel passionately about, that's good. But the other conversation is just, I want to understand you and I want you to understand me. You know, the politics, not just of accusation, but also the politics of confession where you can admit, well, yeah, I don't know this, or maybe I was wrong about that. You know, it's all projection, no reflection. It's all accusation, no confession. And that kind of conversation makes it very difficult to get anything done where we do agree. And listen, where we don't agree, we should fight. Like, again, people, Van, you know, you sound so kumbaya. No. I'm saying where we don't agree, let's fight very hard. But we've got to have a constructive disagreement on the battlefield. So if there is some common ground, we can find it. And then beyond the battlefield, where there is already common ground, we've got to get back to working across some of these lines again. If we listen, democracies can fail. Democracies can fail. And if we keep going the direction we're going, we're going to end up where we're headed. And where we're headed is not good. And so I'm saying something that is hard for liberals to hear. I'm saying I'm actually asking progressives to do something that is unfair for me to ask them to do. I'm asking progressives who have already suffered. Many of us are women. We're people of color. We're LGBT. We're Muslim. We're Native American. We're Asian. We're people who've already suffered the indignities of living in a society that disrespects us on a daily basis. And now we have a president that's tripling down on all of it. And I'm saying we should be the ones to rise above.
We also have a president who in some ways has been able to communicate the message that you are more important,
yes,
or certainly superior even, than all of these people who are part of what you just mentioned and cataloged. In other words, there's too much attention paid to them. There's too much deference given to them. You white Americans need the attention and not the guilt of what, being privileged?
Right. And so the president is a genius and a mastermind of pissing us off. He should get some kind of MacArthur Genius Award for just pissing
MacArthur
us off.
MacArthur or McCarthy?
McCarthy. Well said, sir. But that's his main talent, is pissing us off so that every day we're so upset and we're so distressed and we're so depressed that we're no longer being effective. When you have someone like him, your only responsibility is to grow your coalition and erode his. That's all. So how do we grow our own coalition? Let's be very honest. We never tell the truth. This last campaign, 2016, and I write about it in the book, We didn't invest in our grassroots in the right way. There were African Americans in Michigan that never got the support to turn out their base. Latinos in Florida ran out of money at voter registration, let alone get out the vote. There was this idea at the top of our party that we have the data shows we're going to win, and all we have to do is, you know, let him fail and we'll be okay. And we didn't invest in our grassroots. We didn't reach out. You know, we're talking about, you know, we let our candidate say the word deplorables. These are mistakes that we made. Hey, 80% I put on the other side. 90% I put on the other side. But what about our 10% where we could have done a better job? Have we learned from that? Because if we don't, he's going to keep doing what he's doing. We'll keep doing what we're doing. And we'll have 8 years of this guy plus Ivanka if we're not careful. So I'm begging people. I get it. It's not fair for me to ask us to rise above it and to find a way out of this. But if we don't do it, nobody else is going
to
do it.
But you're speaking mainly to progressives. And
yes.
Yet in the book, you want to speak to conservatives, too.
I have a lot to say to conservatives in the book because, look, I've met a bunch of conservatives, Trump voters. Some of them are some of the best people I've ever met. Just incredible salt of the earth people. And I challenge them personally and in the book. If you're a conservative, stay a conservative. If you're a Republican, stay a Republican. Don't come over here in our party. We got enough problems. But be a better Republican. Be a better conservative. Conservatives should be standing up. You got Russia messing up our democracy and you won't say anything? You got the president poking his nose now in private enterprise, trying to tell the NFL what to do and corporate media what to do, and you won't say anything? You're supposed to be, you know, this party of colorblind meritocracy, the party of Lincoln, and you've got Steve Bannon running around slapping baseball caps off of people's heads and being a bully, and you want to stick up to Steve Bannon? So listen, if you're a conservative, here's what I say. I've never seen a bird fly with only a left wing or only a right wing. It takes two birds to fly. I respect conservatives, but be a better conservative. I'm going to be a better progressive. I'll call my party out, but you be a better conservative and we'll get somewhere.
We're talking to Van Jones, social entrepreneur, political commentator, and TV host. His new book is Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart and How We Come Together. The work you did here in San Francisco and in the Bay Area, in fact, you write about difficulties you had with Jerry Brown and difficulties you had with Willie Brown, but you're also writing about something that ties right into what I said initially was, I think, the vision of your book. You fought against police brutality and
yes.
Had a lot of activism in what has really burgeoned into a major movement against especially police abuse toward young black men and police abuse in the black neighborhoods and so forth. You get conservatives on the same page and common ground with something like that, or immigration, where essentially the chasm is so wide. They see police officers as enforcers of the law, many of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're brooking no quarter in terms of the role that they play to enforce the law. They see them as enforcers of the law and as people who are terribly set upon by forces that are beyond their control. Whereas, you know, the black community and those progressives you speak about see them in an entirely different light. They're blue monsters in many eyes. They're pigs in many eyes. Yeah.
You know, this is one of the most heartbreaking divides. You know, I come from a law enforcement family. My dad was a cop in the military before he became an educator. My favorite uncle Milton, just retired from the Memphis City Police Force. And so, you know, I grew up seeing cops not as saints or superheroes, but as city employees, some of whom are great, some of whom are terrible, but who could never get in trouble no matter what they did. And, you know, any human system without adequate checks and balances will tend toward corruption and abuse. That's why we have meat inspectors and building inspectors, not because you hate butchers or you hate construction workers, but because somebody's got to oversee the stuff and make sure it's done right. And so, you know, but now you've got a generation of African-American, Latino, and other low-income kids crushed between unlawful street violence on the one hand and unlawful police violence on the other hand. And the right wing jumps up and down about the street violence. The left wing jumps up and down about the unlawful police violence, and nothing gets any better. And so, you know, I have been able to work.
So where's the common ground?
Well, the common ground is that there are Republican governors who have actually been working to reduce the number of people behind bars. And they've been successful in Texas, Ohio, and Georgia in reducing incarceration and the crime rate at the same time. I worked with Newt Gingrich. You know, I had a TV show with Newt Gingrich called Crossfire. We disagreed on everything but this issue. But Newt told me, and I talk about it in the book, if you your 90% enemy can be your 10% friend where you agree. And so Newt and I fight about everything in the world, but on criminal justice and on addiction, where we both have a common set of ideas, we work together. My only point
You're talking about incarceration. I'm talking about day-to-day activity with police, which is seen in entirely different lights.
Listen, there's some stuff we're just going to fight about. And on that, on the policing stuff, it's very hard. But what I say to conservatives is, you talk about Chicago and the street violence there. Have you ever been? Have you ever been to a funeral? Have you ever stood outside one of those, candlelight memorials with the teddy bears and that kind of stuff and held the hands of those grandmothers and listened to what they want? If you want to see the violence come down on the street side, the grandmas are not calling for more paramilitary policing. They're calling for more opportunity and better policing. We could come together on this if we worked at it. Listen, but here's my thing. We've now gotten to the point where when we talk about the stuff, the reason I call the book Beyond the Messy Truth, how we came apart, how we came together, is because the truth is messy. It's whenever it's we're 100% right, they're 100% wrong. Everything we say is correct. Everything they say is stupid. All you know is this is a false conversation. There is no conversation that's a truthful conversation in your life, in your family, with your significant other.
We have an administration that believes in alternate facts now. It's difficult to talk about truth in that vein, but you're talking about moving across the aisle with people like Gingrich and so forth. You worked in the Obama administration, and in the Obama administration, there were people like McConnell who said, we're not going to go along with anything that this president puts forward. We just want to defeat this president.
Well, and who was the first victim of that? I was. Don't forget.
Well, Glenn Beck helped bring that about.
All your listeners may not be aware, but, I was in the Obama administration for 6 months, best 6 months of my life, followed by the worst 6 weeks. When Glenn Beck, given false information by Americans for Prosperity, tried to drum me out of the White House, and I finally just quit so I could stop being a distraction.
It was old-fashioned red baiting, really.
Old-fashioned red baiting and a bunch of other stuff. But let me just tell you something, which I've never talked about publicly or rarely talked about publicly. The money that was spent to fund that campaign to get me out of the White House came from an operation called Koch Industries, which is not Coca-Cola, but a very, very bad set of actors when it comes to our democracy and our environment. Do you know who I work with every day to close prisons? That same Koch Industries, because they're libertarians, and though we disagree on everything else, they don't believe we should be putting this many people behind bars in America and gobbling up all these liberties and rights. So I am not asking anybody to do something I haven't done myself. I was personally had my career almost destroyed by the far right in our country. But where there is a common interest, we owe it to people to come together and get something done.
All right, let's hear what you, our listeners, have to say about what you're hearing. As I said, it's really a vision that Van Jones has put forth in his new book. The book is called Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart and How We Can Come Together, How We Come Together. And he says, call them out for their worst stuff, but call them up for the best. And let me bring you into the conversation here by telling you how you can join us. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. You can call us now and sound out whatever you need to, or let us know what's on your mind, any questions or comments. Again, 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQEDForum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending the hour with Van Jones, who's here with us in studio. And in the wake of President Trump's election, he, Van Jones, a CNN commentator, tearfully said this was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president in part. And to better understand Trump supporters, Van Jones actually sat down with them at their dinner tables to discuss politics, their reasons for voting for President Trump, and why many had voted for Obama in the two previous elections before that. He's with us, and we're talking about his new book, which is called Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart and How We Come Together, and we do invite your involvement in the program. You can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786 or by email forum@kqed.org or by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or by tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum, and I'll mention that Van will be at City Arts and Lectures at the Norris Theater on Wednesday evening at 7:30, and I'm going to go to your calls and emails here, but I have to ask first, let's talk about Gold Star parents. What have you been saying about this, and what's your take on it? And Trump's involvement in it and getting John Kelly involved as well.
Well, it's just, it's you know, more crazy from the crazy. I mean, here's somebody who, when he had a chance to go and serve the country, he said, my footsie hurts. And five times, couldn't figure out a way to go serve.
There's also a man who said that his Vietnam was worry about STDs.
Exactly. So so this is the kind of person, you know, because he hasn't served, he's a very self-involved person who maybe has some kind of narcissistic disorder. He hasn't done it, so he can say, you say bad stuff about John McCain. He also, you know, will attack our existing soldiers, you know, who happen to be, you know, transgender. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, if you're waiting for Van Jones to go and put on a uniform and go fight some terrorists, I'm scared. I'm not going to do it. If somebody wants to go and protect and serve in this country and they're transgender or gay and lesbian, people like myself and Donald Trump, who are too chicken to go, need to salute and shut up. So, you know, there's a problem that you've got now with him doing this stuff. But my concern is this. It'll be another outrage tomorrow. It'll be another outrage, you know, every 5 minutes. And he's doing it on purpose, not just to gin up his base. That's not the main thing. It's to distract us. It's to have us so apoplectic every day that we're not looking at the bigger picture. You know what the bigger picture is? Democracy.
You think he's that cunning, really?
He knows what works. He knows what works. I mean, how he processes it, I don't know. But he knows that us jumping around, you know, Bannon says it all the time. The more we're talking about these kind of, you know, cultural war issues, the better off they are. The bigger issues are...
Well, tomorrow in this hour, we're going to have some psychiatrists who have gone out on a limb and violated what's known as the Goldwater Rule and have said that they're trying to diagnose President Trump. We'll hear about that.
But you know who's really crazy? Look, narcissism, that, at his level, makes you crazy. But it's also crazy to do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And liberals have been, you know, outraged every morning since he came down that escalator 2 years ago, expecting a different result. We should stay, you know, angry about this stuff. But at a certain point, this is not working. And when do we actually take a deep breath and say, you know what, I'm being triggered, I'm being re-traumatized, but I got more strength than this. And I'm going to reach down and I'm going to start working again. I can't get over the fact that progressives did not fight as hard to stop this guy as we fought to stop Mitt Romney. I mean, we worked harder to stop John McCain than we fought to stop Trump. So in some ways, we're not powerless. We're powerful. When we stood up and fought in 2008, 2012, not tweet, not Facebook, but fought, organized, we changed history. When we sat down and slacked off, the country fell apart. That means we're not powerless, we're powerful, but we've got to get back to doing the stuff that feels good, that we like, you know, causes, solutions coming together, and then we'll be able to deal with them. Freaking out every morning is not a strategy to take the country back.
A practical question. You write in your book about the lineage from Al Gore and, well, essentially, I would from Patrick Buchanan to Bannon and President Trump, and from Al Gore.
From Ralph Nader.
From Ralph Nader in opposition to Al Gore, right, to Bernie Sanders in opposition to Hillary Clinton. What I'm wondering is, you think you have to have unified political parties to have unity in this country, if there's anything even resembling unity?
You know, we've always been a fractious country, and we've always had, you know, debates and arguments.
Is this fractious as these two parties are now by themselves?
I mean, oh, you mean the splits inside the party?
Yeah,
you
know,
I talk in the book about how you actually have four parties and not two. You have what I call the kind of conservative populist or right wing populist, which is kind of Bannon. You have the left wing populist, which is Bernie. You've got essentially the establishment conservatives, which are, you know, the Bushes, and the establishment progressives, which are the Clintons. And you have this kind of four-way food fight going on in the country. I don't know how it settles out. I am proud to be a part of an organization, the Dream Corps, here in the Bay Area, that focuses on trying to find common ground and solutions and get stuff done. And so the book actually is not just my, you know, view. About a third of the book is resources. It's ideas. It's documentaries you can watch. It's a helpful tool for people who want to get out of this Trump slump and get back into stuff that we want to do. So a third of the book, Beyond the Messy Truth, is just a toolkit to help people. And a lot of that is developed out of the Dream Corps, the dreamcorps.org, where I work.
And let's bring on our callers, and let's go first to Eartha. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. Van, I'm a big fan. I will say I'd like to make 3 points. I'll make them quickly. I would like to say I'm disappointed to hear equivocation between Democrats and Republicans. Yes, they're both corrupt. And yes, in many ways, they both are hampered by corporate ties. But there are very significant differences as well. And I just, I think when people try to be even-handed in discussing the two parties, very often we say, oh, yes, well, they're both bad. Well, they're not really the same. There are many things like equal pay for equal work, supportive unions, health care, that are in which there are significant differences. I just would like to make that point. Secondly, there's so much talk in all media about the neglect of the white working class. And it's been talked to death. But again, I'd like to point out that this much talk about Democrats ignoring the white working class, again, it's the Democrats who have fought for a minimum wage, for equal pay for equal work, for financial regulation. And these things are significant, and they do affect the way we live. And I don't think it's given enough credit, not that I'm a big Democratic fan, by the way. And thirdly, I just want to point out, I respect your tone about reaching across the aisle. As frustrated as I was with President Obama spending the first part of his term when he had Congress and the Senate and the House, and he could have really run a progressive agenda, and he was very graciously reached across the aisle, maybe a little too much for some of us, something George Bush nor Trump did. And it's frustrating. And I'd also like to chart the Republicans versus the Democrats in terms of vice presidential picks. Since Al Gore, people like to say, oh, well, the Democrats are moving further to the left and the Republicans are moving further to the right. And I think vice presidential choices point out the lie to that, which is that Al Gore chose Joseph Lieberman, the most Republican Democratic senator there could be. John Kerry asked John McCain to be his running mate. And then Hillary Clinton with Tim Kaine. Meanwhile, Republicans' vice presidential picks move farther and farther to the right. So I'd like to respectfully ask for an end to equivocation. And with that, I'll say goodbye and thank you.
All right. Thank you for all those points. Appreciate hearing from you, Van.
Great. You know, it's interesting. This is the argument that the liberals have been making since the election. And they keep making it. And it keeps having the same outcome, which is that liberals feel very comforted by this argument. And it doesn't, unfortunately, give us a pathway to win. Don't think I'm equivocating. I think I'm, you know, actually I'm very proud to be a part of daily fights to try to actually make a difference. I'm a part of the Dream Corps, you know, Cut 50, our campaign, which is led by Jessica Jackson Sloan, a rising star here in California. You know, with our allies, we got 4 bills passed in California to help fix the juvenile justice system at the same time that we saved health care for 20,000 coal miners in West Virginia. You can fight very, very hard for our progressive values, stick up for Muslims, stick up for LGBTQ, and never, ever back down on that. And also do a better job of fighting for people, not because they're white and male and, you know, it sounds good, but because they're hurting. Because they're suffering.
What do you do with the fact there are a couple of races now, Virginia and Mississippi, for example. One candidate will come out and say, I believe in a woman's right to choose, and it's a lost game almost before they get into the campaign.
Yeah, sure. Listen, it's a big country, 300 million people. The toughest thing we've ever done in human history in 10,000 years is to try to do what we're doing in the United States. 300 million people, every color, every faith, every sexuality, every gender, every kind of human being ever born in one country trying to do it as a democracy. We underestimate the heroism of our own cause as Americans and as progressives when we think it's supposed to be easy, it's supposed to be obvious. Anyone who doesn't agree with us is an idiot or a bigot. And I'm not going to let, by the way, just to respond to the caller, I'm not going to let my standards for my conduct be set by my opponent. That was Dr. King's point. Dr. King said, you never let somebody drag you so low as to hate them. I was raised, and I think most people here were raised, to do what's right. And what's right in this country is not appeasement. It's not equivocation. You look in the mirror when you lose to somebody like Donald Trump, and you say there's not one thing we could have done better, and it's all their fault. That's what my kids say at the end of a soccer game when they lost. That is not, and we don't let them get away with that as children. We listen, make it 80% their fault or 90%. But we've got to look in the mirror. And the other thing I want to say is simply this. If we can find a few things to do better, don't forget, please, out of 120 million votes that were cast, we lost this thing by 70,000 votes spread out over three Rust Belt states. And in that 70,000 were people who voted for Obama twice and then jumped the fence. This is a smaller problem to solve than we act like it is. It's 70,000 people whose pain we ignored. If you include their pain, we get to govern. And everybody who's resisting that, I just think, listen, we're better than this. We can include more people in our circle than we should.
Can't Trump maybe, despite all of the brickbats that have gone from you and others, maybe move across the aisle? I mean, when he was talking to Schumer and Pelosi about DACA, it seemed Trump, like he was willing at least to do something along
Trump
those lines.
Trump is a lying, narcissistic nightmare, and any strategy that is designed to do anything with him or no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Trump voters. I'm not talking about Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a danger, a present danger, a clear and present danger to the entire planet. There's only two things that you can't survive. We can have bad health care and bad tax policy, but runaway climate disruption like we're experiencing, where you got floods and fires combined with nuclear war, you can't deal with nuclear war and you can't deal with climate catastrophes like we're talking about. And he is doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on both. Donald Trump is a complete disaster. But my question is, how do we make sure it never happens again? In both parties should be ashamed of ourselves that this guy even got out the gate. And if you can't put out a book that says, here's what both parties need to do differently, without it being, well, you're engaging in false equivalence, this is going to make sure that we don't make the reforms we need to make as progressives, and you open the door to 8 years of this stuff plus Ivanka.
The book, again, is Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart and How We Come Together. Boy, you don't like Ivanka much, do you? No. A lot of people would say Trump and Pence, not Trump and, and his daughter.
No, listen, I think that he's on track right now, which liberals don't want to hear, for 8 years. And if we and we're helping him by refusing to look in the mirror. And so this book is tough love for both parties. Both parties should be ashamed of ourselves.
What's Ivanka got to do with it?
Well, though? Ivanka is likely to run in 8 years. And I mean, and listen, I
thought maybe Jared Kushner. You think Ivanka?
No, look, I think it's a Trump name that matters. I think that she's likely to run in 8 years. And I think if she ran in 8 years, she might win. And listen, by the way, folks, as much as we get upset about, you know, Donald Trump and all his nonsense, this is more like Iran-Contra than Watergate. Some people will go to jail, but the presidency will probably survive all this stuff. And so, you know, if you're expecting an impeachment to happen tomorrow, these Republicans are not going to impeach this guy.
No, but there are people like, the guy who actually wrote The Art of the Deal, who said that Mueller has some stuff and
sure,
he can work with the New York DA and they can actually bring charges on a state level so he can't pardon himself. I mean, there is a scenario that could break through here because he doesn't want to go to jail and he doesn't want his kids to go to jail. And if they have stuff on him, they can probably, they could do it to Nixon. They could have put him to jail.
Look, I think that that's a very thin thread to hang the future of humanity on. And I think it's a lot smarter for us to think about how we can actually improve as progressives and frankly as smart, sober-minded conservatives to prevent this from happening again by focusing on the common ground where it exists.
All right. Well, I'm going to focus on more callers here. A lot of people want to talk to you. Jane is next. Jane, join us.
The one thing I wanted to talk about, although I have things on every single thing that Van said because he's excellent. I give you a lot of credit, Van, for being able to talk to these people because not everyone can do it, and I certainly couldn't. But
it's interesting that phrase, these people.
These people.
You usually,
wow.
Yeah, Van's eyebrows went up and so did mine. I used to talk about black folks that way.
These people.
Yeah.
But
go ahead. I'm sorry.
When you hear the president and his press secretary and his chief of staff lie daily, it's very hard to not react. And as Van said, people who think this way are completely distraught about this whole thing, and it's very difficult. But what I wanted to bring up is that with regard to the prison system and too many African Americans being put in prison, one of the things that I think is so bad is that we have many privatized prisons, and it's in their interest to keep more people in there.
Well, I understand that what I'm saying is very triggering to a lot of people because people are distraught. And they're not just distraught. they're being re-traumatized because most of us had to deal with bullies growing up. And most of us were bullied because of our skin color, our gender, or, you know, our sexuality. And so to have the bully win, to have the bully win and continue to be a bully is incredibly psychologically, spiritually, and emotionally difficult for us. And what I'm saying is I understand that, I know that, and we're stronger than we know. Breakdowns can lead to breakthroughs if you use them right. Look at your personal life. Every bad thing that came your way, you found a way to turn it around and to use it for strength. And what I'm saying is that this is that moment for us now. Let's take this. Let's not regress back to our childhood experience of helplessness and just be freaked out every day. Let's realize, hold on a second. We are in a situation where we had power that we didn't use. I don't know a single person, very few, who worked as hard, who, if they could do it over again, would have done exactly what we, a year ago, what we did. Everybody I know would have worked harder. Everybody I know would have fought harder, which means that there was some power that we had we didn't use. Let's focus on the power that we do have right now. Are we using it correctly now? Or are we squandering it just like we did last year, being upset but not working? This book, Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart and How We Come Together, has real stuff we can do. Real, you know, working on the opioid addiction crisis, working on criminal justice, doing the stuff that we're doing at the dreamcore.org every day. This is the way out of the psychological funk. He's got us psychologically beat, man. We are just freaked out. Dude, the best people I know in the country, the smartest people, the people who care the most, are depressed 2 years after he came down the escalator. And I'm saying, enough. Enough.
Do you ever think of being a preacher? You did at one time, didn't you?
Well, I grew up in the church, and sometimes it comes out on the radio. Sorry about that.
Here's a tweet from a listener. It says, how do we overcome the media divide, which panders to each side's worst impulses?
Well, part of it is that, you know, we participate in that. You know, when I had my show with Newt called Crossfire, we tried to do a segment called Ceasefire, where we talked about where we got along. It got the worst ratings on the network. So part of it is we're...
So you're part of the problem.
Oh, I'm a big part of the problem. I'm a pundit on cable television. But what I'm saying is that people also, that we tweet, what do you call it? We share and tweet all the rants, all the crazy stuff, all the fist fights, you know, and that sends a signal to the system that people want this stuff.
Here's Melanie as our next caller. Melanie, you're on the air.
Hi, Ben, welcome. Thank you very much for taking the call. Van, this is Melanie Edwards. I'm one of the diasporas in the Bay Area from Middle America.
Yeah.
I also run an organization called Mobile Metrics and am an Echoing Green Fellow. And you actually interviewed me 10 years ago for the fellowship. So thank you.
Congratulations.
I want to know, you talked about a toolkit. What are like the top three concrete specifics you would give us, all of us who are listening, how to broaden our listening circle, mm-hmm. particularly to include Middle America?
Well, first of all, I would say, and I mean this sincerely, you know, give my book a chance. There's stuff in the book, and I can't go into it all on the radio, that I think gives a perspective that lets us stay progressive and stay strong, but also widen the circle. And also lets conservatives stay strong and shrink their circle so it doesn't include these terrible neo-Nazis. But there's also... you know, stuff in the book about, again, the addiction crisis, criminal justice, and the other thing we don't even talk about, you know, the big trend, you know, you've got all democracies are now in retreat. The authoritarians are gaining ground everywhere. It's not just Trump. You look at ISIS, you look at Putin, you look at China, you look at Western Europe. The democracies are in trouble. Part of that is because technology is pulling the rug out from under people economically. So I talk in the book about how we can get back in the game. None of our kids are being taught appropriately about the jobs of tomorrow, whether you're talking about artificial intelligence, you know, going to Mars, driverless cars, robots. This is the stuff, red and blue, that we're going to have to do a better job of preparing for. So the White Walkers are coming, if you watch Game of Thrones, and it's robots, it's technology. We aren't even talking about the real issues anymore because this guy has us so much on his tweets. He's ADD, and now we're ADD. And so I just encourage you, give the book a chance. It's called Beyond the Messy Truth. I am desperately trying to make sure this never happens again, but we've got to have some self-reflection if we want to be able to beat him. He's got us figured out. Let's get ourselves figured out and beat him.
Did you read about this guy who came up and hugged him? You mentioned the neo-Nazis came up and hugged one of these guys wearing swastikas all over his shirt. It was a Richard Spencer event, I guess, in Florida. Young African-American. I mean, it was a strange event. Somebody tried to punch this guy because he was wearing these swastikas. Somebody did get a punch in. This young African-American got right up to him, and he said, I just felt I wanted to hug him.
Yeah.
And I said, why do you hate me? He kept saying to him, why do you hate me? Why do you hate me? And the guy just said, the Nazi, said, I don't know, you know. Right. And he thought he had made a breakthrough. I mean, you always use that word breakthrough. I mean, you can have that breakthrough, strangely enough, on an individual level.
Yeah, listen, I was in Charleston right after those nine African-Americans were murdered by a young neo-Nazi in that church. And I almost gave up. You know, you go in there and you see the bullet holes in a church basement with innocent people. I mean,
there's still people on the internet saying, free that guy.
You know, but what was amazing to me was being there and those churchgoers and the family members who said, we forgive this guy. We're not going to let him turn us into haters ourselves. And we don't want him to have the death penalty. And I said, listen, I'm trying to keep up with you guys on this, but this makes no sense to me. I grew up in the church, but this guy is a church. And they said, hold on a second. There's something called KKK members. There's something called former KKK members. There's something called Nazis and something called former Nazis. And even some of these people out here who are doing this terrible stuff, we believe that 10 years from now, some of them could be our best friends saying how they came out of hatred. And you've got to hold on to that possibility of redemption for everybody, including them. I said, you know what? If you guys can have this position, having literally just buried your own family members, I think some of us maybe could refriend some of our Trump voting cousins.
Well, that turned you around.
Yeah, it did. Because I realized that, you know we have more capacity for grace and for pushing through this, and we're using and I believe more in both good progressives and good conservatives than how we've been showing up.
Here's Mark. Mark, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I really wanted to, stand with you around talking to progressives, and I think you said the thin line, I might say the thin line of illusion people hold on to. I mean, if we're talking about 8 years of Trump, even 4 years of Trump, look what he's done in 1 year. I mean, and
9 months.
North Korea. Look, I'm going to take part in something that's happening around the country on November 4th. People rising up, taking the streets, holding the streets day after day, gathering strength until we can drive them from power like they did in South Korea. And I'm just wondering whether you've heard of that, what you think of that. I mean, it is stepping out of just relying on others to do this. We have to do this ourselves.
Well, let's talk with Van Jones about it. I'm glad you brought that up, Mark, and I thank you for it, about resistance. And maybe even you want to say something about the Antifa movement.
Look, I had not heard about this November 4th movement. I have to learn more about it. I think people should do whatever they think is in their heart to do, because we have no idea what's going to make a difference. I mean, who would have thought that Occupy Wall Street would permanently change our conversation about class, or that Black Lives Matter would, completely, put back on the map the question around police brutality and criminal justice. So I have no idea what's going to happen. What I would say is this. I think it's going to take more than just any one thing. I think we've got to learn. I just, from my point of view, I am so proud that the progressives have included in our circle all these groups that were mistreated and disrespected and spat on for generations. And we're unapologetic. LGBT, African Americans, immigrants, there's no apology in us for sticking up for our base. And I love that. And I just want us to draw the circle a little bit bigger, bring that same passion to other people who are hurting, and not let this guy trick us into having low-income African-Americans fighting and angry with low-income white folks because they've been tricked into hating us. As long as he can keep this division game going and trigger us so that we're so angry that we won't even pull into our circle coal miners who have black lung disease, who are dying.
And he knows how to appeal to them, though. He says he's going to put them back
to
work.
Let me tell you something.
Remember, Hillary Clinton did not. I mean, she was talking about alternative energy, so it had a lot to do with her losing, I think, in West Virginia.
Let me just tell you something. I mean, we probably would have lost West Virginia anyway, but just let me tell you something, man. If you want to put those industrial heartland workers back to work, The progressives have the answer, and that is the clean energy revolution. Smart cars, smart batteries, wind turbines, solar panels, those folks could be working right now, if we would get over this nonsense that climate change isn't happening. If you want to reach out to coal miners, listen, we've got to be able to move people. First of all, they've been abandoned by the coal companies. Nobody knows this. The coal companies have canceled their pensions, their health care, their suffering, and we should be the ones fighting to get that stuff back for them. And listen, if they want to vote for Republicans, fine, but vote for better Republicans. Don't vote for these lunatics. You know, I don't mind you voting for a Republican. I mind you voting for neo-Nazis and their sympathizers. And if we can just get back to that, we're going to be just fine. We'll be just fine.
Talking again with Van Jones, and he'll be at City Arts and Lectures, Norris Theater, tonight. Excuse me, tomorrow night. No, it's Monday. Wednesday. He'll be there Wednesday at 7:30. Let me get the time straight. And let me tell you again the name of his new book. It's called Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart and How We Come Together. So good to have you back with us on Forum. Thank you for joining us.
It's a huge honor to be on your show.
Glad to have you. And we are here with you, our listeners, Monday through Friday. You can continue this discussion online. In fact, I encourage you to do that. KQED.org/forum, and we also repeat an hour in the evening, 10 to 11, and remind you that we'll be back tomorrow. In fact, we are going to talk about some psychiatrists who put out a book about Donald Trump, and that brings up all kinds of questions. There's a thing called the Goldwater Rule. Should psychiatrists actually try to make a diagnosis of any public official, particularly a president of the United States, when they're not treating him and, you know, coming out with a strong diagnosis that they believe is right? That'll be our topic tomorrow. Stay with us for KQED Public Radio and for all of us here at KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.